The Strangelight Workshop, Epilogue, The Beginning of the End. The three moons of Cain, each full, were arranged in the southern sky in a perfect, inverted, equilateral triangle. Pale blue Artis flickered shyly in the eastern corner, while Calder's lordly brilliance lit the night from the west. And Laris, positioned at the nadir, seethed red with malicious portent. After decades of occult study, Jacob Strathmore was intimately familiar with this particular celestial formation, a cosmic phenomena that occurred only once every 99 years and 66 days. Called the Oblivion Knot, it was believed that when the moons were so ordered, the Devourer Worm attacked the walls of the City of Men in Arcane with the greatest ferocity. It was a time when the Creator of Man was the most distracted from the events of Cain. Legend said that if the world did not end within 66 days of the confluence of the moons, then it would endure for another 99 years. This year, the Oblivion Knot just happened to coincide with the longest night, an extra day added to the calendar at the end of every third year, a celebration in remembrance of the dead observed across the Iron Kingdoms. In occult circles, it was widely held as the time when the barrier between the realms of the living and the dead was at its thinnest. Strathmore had little doubt that the time for his meeting with the old hag, the one he called Click-Clack, had been carefully chosen. The journey from Cyril had been excruciating. An early onset of winter had turned riverboat travel up the Dragon's Tongue unpleasant enough to make Strathmore miss the cold, dank corridors of Blackwell Hall. But it wasn't the chilly air or the choppy water that played on Strathmore's nerves. It was the weight. He had spent months voyaging to and from the distant continent of Zu, but that it felt like a quick jaunt compared to the 5 days by boat to Corvus. Never before had he been so eager to arrive at his destination, nor so anxious about being on time. The old crone had been very specific about the hour and the place of their meeting, and she was explicit about what was at stake should he fail to be there on time. Now Strathmore stood in the clearing of a murky forest to the southeast of Corvus, an infamous region called Widower's Wood. Were it not for the gathering crows that always seemed to herald her arrival, he would have been worried he was in the wrong place. He fished a small brass pocket watch from his vest pocket and flipped it open, grimacing at the time.
She should be here by now.
He did not have 99 years to wait for another opportunity. Keller, Strathmore's right-hand man, sat atop the driver's box of the coach they had taken from the city. He had both hands on the double-barreled scattergun resting across his knees as he surveyed the shadows moving in the moonlit thicket. He was a big man, barrel-chested, looking even sturdier beneath the high-collared greatcoat he wore to guard against the chill. He showed no sign of uneasiness, but Strathmore knew the man suffered anxiety whenever he was away from his duties managing Blackwell Hall. Still, Commander Banning Keller had refused to let Strathmore come alone. His duty to Blackwell was nothing, he said, before his duty to its lord. Strathmore raised a pair of complex-looking goggles hanging around his neck and fitted them over his eyes. They were special goggles, custom-crafted, the kind worn by the Strangelight investigators. He looked up at Keller and tapped the side of the goggles with a finger, indicating Keller should don his as well. Then he stooped to pick up the heavy lantern from atop a large trunk at his feet. Strathmore's right hand shot to his lower back to suppress the hot stabbing sensation that occurred every time he lifted anything heavier than a cup of tea. He primed the lantern and pushed the sparker. It was an older model and was both dimmer and less reliable than the modern projectors field investigators used, but it was one of the first Strangelight lanterns Strathmore had managed to make operate reliably. He never traveled without it. Cool violet light seeped through the seams and vents of the hourglass-shaped canister. Strathmore flipped back the cover of the bullseye lens and passed the cone of light over the ground around him, taking care not to shine into the eyes of the horses. Though they waited in the middle of a seemingly untamed wilderness, Strathmore stood upon a circular platform of time-worn stone blocks, nearly covered by moss and muck. On either side of the sunken dais was a thick stanchion, hewn from the same stone beneath his feet. A heavy iron ring was affixed to each stanchion, and from each ring dangled a broken length of rusted chain. Where the strange light played across the stone surface, Strathmore could see undulations in the violet illumination, like heat ripples across a desert plain in the middle of summer. Holding the lantern steady, he twisted a knob on the side of his goggles, adjusting the protective lenses to bring the light frequency into focus. Terrible things had happened here. Cruel and unjust things carried out by hands as evil as any that had ever spilled blood on Cain. Visible echoes of the pain inflicted at this sight oozed out of the stones soaked with century after century of bloodshed and torment. Shadows of countless victims flitted around the edges of the dais, shrinking from the light but powerless to sever the memory of the chains that had bound them in place in their last moments of life. Like Blackwell Hall, there was more beneath the surface than could be seen, even with the strange light. This was an ancient place, a nexus between worlds with a power over the human soul that even the gods could not defy.
Like motes to the flame, yes.
Keller leaped to his feet and flung back his goggles, aiming his scattergun into the darkness.
Hold, Keller.
Strathmore covered the lantern and raised his goggles, stepping toward the voice. A towering shadow as tall as the trees around them loomed up from the edge of the clearing, blotting out the glow of the three moons that hung in formation in the sky. It closed on them, breaking through the brush with heavy footfalls that shook the ground beneath them. How something so large had gotten so close without detection, Strathmore could not fathom. A blaze of Warjack's heart fire glowed from numerous vents and exhaust ports, arrayed across the machine that strode into the clearing. By all appearances, it looked like a colossal mechanical ostrich, with its two great inverted legs and a head that protruded forward from the enormous steam engine comprising its body. On its back was a small house, like the captain's quarters on a galleon. And above that seemed to be a turret topped with an armillary sphere and a telescope, like some sort of super-compact observatory. From a platform jutting out from the head of the construct, like the prow of a ship, hung a large lantern around which fluttered a swarm of moths. Perched at the railing, awash in the orange glow of the lantern, was a haggard mass of patchwork canvas and animal skins from which a cluster of smoking stovepipes thrust skyward. In the center of the mass was the face of a woman, shriveled and cracked, and as ancient as the stone Strathmore stood upon. One eye was covered in a dirty rag tied around the old woman's head, while the other twinkled with an impish quality that was at odds with her indefinite but considerable age. Her hands looked like bundles of knives, each finger ending in a black metal talon. In her right hand, she gripped a gnarled staff with a mob of anguished faces carved into it. The blades on her left hand tapped against the railing.
Did you know this ground was once part of the Kardic Empire? It's true. A conqueror rested here, but died from his many cuts. He stained the ground with his blood, making this northern soil. His name is forgotten. Now this ground belongs to no one but the dead. It draws them here. It tempts them, yes. So hungry they are. So hungry they ache.
Strathmore turned and looked up to see a dozen crows that appeared in the trees behind him.
Hungry for what?
But when he looked back up to the balcony, the crone was gone.
Sin.
Strathmore wheeled to find the old woman staring straight at him. Keller had not lowered his scattergun. He spun to aim it at her. The giant steam-powered construct took a menacing step toward him and leered at him with fiery eyes.
It's all right, Keller.
Reluctantly, Keller dropped his aim and sat down on the bench of the coach. The construct chuffed at him mockingly through the grill that formed the lower half of its face. Strathmore glanced impatiently at the trio of moons.
It's late.
So restless are you to leave the land of the living?
You said you found them. You can tell me where they are.
Yes, yes.
She grinned to reveal two rows of jagged yellow teeth.
You are so eager.
The hag tapped the butt of her staff against the trunk next to Strathmore.
Let us see what you have made first.
Of course, of course.
He knelt down and unfastened a pair of latches, then raised the lid back.
To make it work required some deviation from what you specified, but it should work. In theory, that is. It should work in theory.
He reached into the trunk and withdrew a silver metal globe, polished to a mirror finish. Within its unseen innards were complex workings, the height of the workshop's art. A piece of advanced mechanica fused with arcane elements, integrating certain relics acquired by his agents at no small risk. This included recently collected fragments of a rune-inscribed stone brought back from Elsenberg. These radiated energies from beyond Kane. The work that had gone into this sphere was considerable, stretching back decades. The final pieces had fallen into place recently. His investigators had taken a series of spectrographs showing Grimkin entering the world through a two-way portal near the Lely's town of Glenham. Close examination of the energy imprints on these plates had helped him deduce how to stabilize the fields produced by his sphere. Even those craftsmen involved in the sphere's fabrication did not understand its purpose or how it worked. Those were secrets kept to Strathmore himself.
I don't know where you'll ever find the power source strong enough to operate it.
The old crone thrust one talon forward to trace a circle seemingly etched into the globe. Six sets of concentric circles covered the sphere, creating a series of rings across its surface.
The power, yes. It is not the problem. Not here. Not now.
The prototypes, they burned out too quickly, overheated and melted the field conductors. Even with my improvements, I cannot be certain this one will sustain its field more than an instant.
So much can happen in an instant.
She spread her talons wide and snatched the globe from Strathmore's hands. Strathmore walked alongside the peculiar woman as she shuffled toward her mechanical walking observatory.
The others were smaller. This has been scaled up. I managed to reshape the compressor design so the intercooler...
You are ready, yes?
You mean right now?
You came to seek your destiny or to yap about your machines?
Keller, my things, please.
Keller nodded and put down the gun. When Strathmore turned back toward the crone, she was back up on the platform and headed for the door in her little house.
I'll just need a moment, if you please.
A few seconds later, the massive construct stoked its steam engine and shuffled its feet to rotate its entire mass to face the opposite direction, directly towards the moons. Keller hauled a heavy suit of coated canvas from the rear boot of the coach and held it up for Strathmore to see.
You're sure this is going to protect you, Mr. Strathmore?
Keller pulled at the suit as if to test its strength, and he frowned, visibly worried.
If it doesn't, I shan't have far to go to get where I'm going, shall I now?
Keller's expression remained grave. Strathmore began to unbutton his vest.
Come now, don't look so grim. This is what it's all been for, my good man. This is the moment we've been waiting for.
With all due respect, Mr. Strathmore, you're lousy in a scrap. What if you run into trouble? Let me go instead.
Nonsense. I'll not send another soul to that place but mine.
He paused in the middle of removing his shoes and smiled up at the much larger man.
Besides, you know you're much too fond of the spirits to fit into the suit.
He patted Keller's modest gut to drive home the point. Keller's dour mood finally broke. But he looked at Strathmore the way one looks upon a true friend, never expected to be seen again. Yet Strathmore seemed to be growing more energized with each passing second. He took the suit from Keller and loosened a series of laces on its back.
Now, help me get into this blasted thing.
Strathmore hobbled toward the strange construct, his steps hampered by the heavy mechanical suit. Originally intended for deep water diving, the suit was laden with metal reinforcements and iron rings. The weight of such equipment presenting no issue when underwater, but putting a considerable load on Strathmore's old bones now, even with its compensating turbine fed by linked capacitors. Behind Strathmore walked Keller, with his gun slung over one shoulder, and a brass diving helmet in his hand. The helmet had been modified with a respirator and filtering mechanism linked by a flexible hose to several compressed air canisters on his back, nestled alongside a large backpack. This was loaded with supplies and hung with various generally useful tools and other gear, including multiple canteens and Strathmore's strange light lantern. To anyone who might have seen him, Strathmore appeared to be headed on some great expedition, though one could not have been sure if his destination was the bottom of the ocean or a distant land. Above them, a pair of crows took flight from their roost atop the observatory, startled when the armillary sphere began to move. Its arrangement of rings turned within one another as representations of major celestial bodies changed position and alignment. The old crone emerged from the turret to stand upon a small balcony, her talons clicking upon her gnarled staff as she peered into the heavens. Strathmore watched as the enigmatic woman pointed an outstretched talon at Laris, the blood-red moon at the top of the triangle of moons, and he could have sworn it pulsed slightly when she did. As she slowly traced the point of the talon upward toward Ardis, over to Calder, and then back down to Laris, glowing runes ignited in the air before her once again, inscribing a complex arcane formula in violet light.
It is time.
Strathmore nodded to his man, and Keller lifted the helmet, placing it over Strathmore's head to rest its weight upon his shoulders. He fastened a few bolts, securing the helmet in place, and then checked a valve on the respirator.
How is it in there, Mr. Strathmore?
Strathmore unlatched the porthole in the front of the helmet and swung it open.
No need to yell, my good man. I've installed protected vents in the helmet that allow me to hear the outside world while still remaining airtight.
Of course you have, Mr. Strathmore. There's one thing you haven't thought of, though.
Keller took the scatter gun from his shoulder and handed it to Strathmore.
I don't even know if it will work over there.
Well, if it doesn't, use it as a club. Either way, you won't have far to go to get to where you're going.
Watch after the workshop. They wouldn't know what to do without you.
Oh, none of you would.
Keller clapped Strathmore on the shoulders before taking a few steps backward. He then turned and headed for the coach. The old crone continued her sorcery atop the construct. Keller took hold of the reins to ensure the nervous steeds didn't bolt. The armillary sphere seemed to move faster, its rings spinning within one another as glowing runes burst around the crone, then faded away, only to be replaced by more. Finally, the hag raised her staff and brought it down swiftly. The anguished faces carved into the staff came to life, glowing from within with a ghastly green radiance as they writhed and contorted like living things. Above her, the center of the armillary sphere, a great iron representation of the planet Kane, split in half along its equator, the top half separating and rising up from the bottom half. Within its hollow core floated Strathmore's globe. The inscribed lines defining the concentric rings exploded with violet light. An instant later, the rings telescoped outward, altering the shape of the globe from a sphere to a six-pointed star. The star began to spin within the larger iron shell of Kane. The violet light grew in intensity. The world before Strathmore's eyes ripped open. Where there had been nothing but air above the stone dais now swirled a vortex taller than the crone's walking observatory. Around its edges, reality appeared to bend as it was pulled into the gaping maw of the violent storm. But within the spiral, Strathmore could see a different world, a dreadful, smoldering landscape of jagged rock spires and twisted woods that writhed like the faces upon the old crone staff. Strathmore knew these were the uncharted wilds of hell in Arcane, the realm of the dead. He had toiled for 30 years to open a doorway into them.
Go now, Jacob Strathmore! Find the Golden Tower, the Outer Ring! The city of Man. On the eighth floor, behind the 88th door of its 88th room, you will find what you seek.
The crone pointed a wicked talon toward the vortex. Strathmore squared his shoulders and stared into the vortex, readying himself for his journey ahead.
Quickly now! The harvest is about to begin!
Within the vortex, shadowy forms began to gather. Creatures of all shapes and sizes, hideous and inhuman, crept toward the door between realms. Something sinewy and predacious scurried forth and probed the open portal with a long black claw. Satisfied, it grinned, bearing a crawl full of needle-like teeth that gnashed together with rapid anticipation before leaping forward to land right in front of Strathmore.
Mr. Strathmore, shoot the thing for Maro's sake!
But Strathmore merely stood his ground as the vile creature scampered around him on all fours, sniffing at him from beneath a matted mane of wiry black hair. Keller held the brake in place as the horses strained against their reins.
Whoa! Whoa!
Go now, Keller! Be gone from here! Hurry!
The hairy creature had seemingly lost interest and was now making eyes at the horses. But it was what he saw on the other side of the vortex that made Strathmore fear for Keller's life. An army of horrors swelled just beyond the portal, somehow instinctively drawn toward it. One by one, they slipped through. A demonic hound with human hands for feet. A frenzied mace-wielding swine mounted on the back of a shriveled and tortured man. Fanged imps riding flaming broomsticks with the severed heads of ponies impaled on their ends. A lumbering giant skinned in a garment of stitched-together living faces. It was the stuff of nightmares dreamed by the mad and deranged, and it poured into the land of the living like an unstoppable, hellish flood. The demonic hound leapt at the horses. The horses reared and bucked, flinging the stagecoach sideways and shearing the front wheel right off. Keller barely managed to hang on as he drew a pistol and fired at the terrible beast, ripping a chunk out of the side of its skull.
What have you done, Mr. Strathmore? Who is this venturing league with?
The bargain was struck long ago, my friend. But you know, I had no choice. Ethelyn and Tabitha have been waiting far too long.
Jacob closed the portal on the front of the diving helmet and waded into the tide of hellspawn that surged from the vortex. Keller clambered off the coach and, pulling a great knife from a sheath at his side, cut the horses free of their harnesses. As one horse bolted into the woods, Keller climbed onto the back of the other, pulling back its reins with all his strength to keep it from bucking him off in its terrified state.
Witch, what have you brought upon us?
Strathmore could just hear her response as he stepped over the threshold between worlds and into the realm of the dead.
Salvation!
This has been a graphic audio presentation of Wicked Ways, an Iron Kingdoms Chronicles anthology from the Strangelight Workshop. Copyright 2017 by Privateer Press, Inc. All rights reserved. Recorded with permission of the publisher. Publishing copyright 2018, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Prologue, The End of the Beginning, was written by Matthew D. Wilson. Case 1, Murder in the Majestic Playhouse, was written by Michael G. Ryan. Case 2, The Madhouse Disappearances, was written by Zachary C. Parker. Case 3, The Curse of Castle Railthorn, was written by Douglas Seacat. Case 4, The Reaping, was written by Matt Goetz. Case 5, Shadows over Elsenburg, was written by Aaron Rudell. And the epilogue, The Beginning of the End, was written by Matthew D. Wilson. Narrated by Scott McCormick, with performances by Dwen Washington as Abigail Thorpe, Michael John Casey as John Kincaid, Robbie Gay as Elliot Foss, Zeke Alton as Duncan Grimes, Amanda Forstrom as Mel Collins, Gordon Harley as Harlan Versch, Jessica Lauren Ball as Dr. Jana Goodman, Lawrence Redman as Orin Midwinter, with Jonathan Church, Richard Rowan, Steve Winall, Dylan Lynch, Eric Messner, Andy Brownstein, Nanette Savard, Bradley Smith, Joe Mallon, Matthew Bassett, Yasmin Toison, Tia Shearer, Peter Holdway, Colleen Delaney, Carolyn Kashner, James Lewis, Mort Shelby, Rose Elizabeth Supan, David Jordan, Alejandra Ruiz, and Terrence Azelford as Jacob Strathmore. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Scott McCormick. Produced by Richard Rowan, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by David Zitney. Strange Light Workshop theme composed by David Zitney. Looking for more Privateer Press adventures in the Iron Kingdoms? Be sure to look for Murdering Corvus. Death stalks Corvus by night, and only an unlikely group of heroes known as the Black River Irregulars can put an end to the terror. And the Black River Irregulars return in their first full-length novel, Black Dogs, in the undercity of Corvus, where mercenaries and criminals blur the lines between them. A ruthless crime lord has made a bold move to establish a stronghold on Corvus's underworld and make it his own. When Canis Gormley becomes the target of a brutal foreign crime syndicate called the Black Dogs, Colby Sterling and the rest of the Black River Irregulars are prepared to defend her. Both by Richard Lee Byers, and available at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of our nearly 1,000 Action Pump titles, as well as our free graphic audio app for iPhone and Android devices, downloadable extras, and audio guides. And remember to check out Gasp, the free graphic audio story podcast, available on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep listening for a preview of another exciting title in graphic audio.
Graphic Audio presents Michael J. Sullivan's Legends of the First Empire, Book 1, The Age of Myth. Since time immemorial, humans have worshipped the gods they call the Frey, truly a race apart. Some invincible in battle, some masters of magic.
Nepomim Helgavri!
And all seemingly ageless and immortal. But when a god falls to a human blade, the balance of power between humans and those they thought were gods changes forever. Now, only a few stand between humankind and annihilation. Wraith, reluctant to embrace his destiny as the god-killer.
If I cut off his head, will he stay down longer?
He's not getting up. You killed him.
That's a god. Gods don't die. They're immortal.
Really, not so much.
Suri, a young seer, burdened by signs of impending doom.
I've done a reading from bones. Several now. The thing that murdered that man out there isn't a bear at all. It's a powerful demon. If I can learn the demon through nature, then I'll be prepared. The demon is coming at the light of the full moon, but I don't know exactly what kind of demon we're talking about.
And Persephone, who must overcome personal tragedy to lead her people.
Clan Wren, defend your home!
The age of myth gives way to a time of rebellion. Don't miss Legends of the First Empire, Book 1, The Age of Myth, now in graphic audio.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,000 titles and 100 series to choose from in high-quality download formats. If you'd like to listen to an entire series, you can now conveniently purchase a download series set from graphicaudio.net. At graphicaudio.net, you can also earn loyalty rewards points redeemable towards future online purchases. You can stream or get full downloads directly to your mobile phone or tablet with our newly updated Graphic Audio Access app, available on all Android and Apple devices. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. For those of you who are new to Graphic Audio, check out our Graphic Audio Streams subscription service, where you can choose from four different genres. Each plan features two graphic audio titles per month to listen to through our Graphic Audio Access app. At the beginning of every month, the previous featured titles will be automatically removed and replaced by the new featured titles. It's an economical way to check out and sample titles from our various series in graphic audio, starting at only $4.99 per month. And be sure to listen to our newly reformatted Graphic Audio Story Podcast, GASP. Coming soon, GASP will be introducing genre-themed seasons. This fall, just in time for the Halloween season, is the GASP Horror Podcast, featuring host Grandpa Guignol with spooktacular stories that will haunt you for days. Please subscribe, give us a 5-star review, and recommend us to your friends and family. You can get GASP in the free Graphic Audio Access app or subscribe to GASP through Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and RSS feeds. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases, like us on Facebook, or follow us on Twitter or Instagram. Call 1-800-670-5220 or visit www.graphicaudio.net.